Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church. Imagine, just for a second, trying to put a literal price tag on a human soul.
Oh man, that's a heavy thought right out of the gate.
Right, but I mean, in pop culture, we see it all the time. Like, Homer Simpson famously traded his for a $1 donut.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And in music, you know, you've got that old Charlie Daniels song. The going rate for a soul was a solid gold fiddle, which is worth maybe $500,000.
Right, right. Even the U.S. government actually has a formula for this.
Wait, really?
Yeah, the EPA values a human life at roughly, I think it's $8.6 million.
Wow. Okay, so $8.6 million. But today, we are going to look at a mathematical reality that says every single one of those estimates is just drastically, tragically wrong.
Yeah, completely off base. And before we get into this deeply compelling material, we do want to remind you that you can find the full sermons we are analyzing today on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, you definitely want to go to the website, faithwayfbc.com, for all the information you need to get connected. You really need to hear the full context of these messages.
Absolutely.
Because the mission of this deep dive today is to explore two incredibly powerful teachings delivered during a recent missions conference. We're looking at the insights from Pastor Tim Travis and a veteran missionary named Charlie Powell.
Yeah, and our goal is to explore this fascinating and honestly somewhat uncomfortable intersection between extreme generosity and the eternal value of a human life.
It is a heavy topic, for sure. But it completely reframes how you look at the resources you have in your bank account right now.
Oh, 100%. It takes very abstract concepts, you know, words like giving and eternity that we hear all the time in church, and it forces them into the practical reality of our everyday lives.
Okay, let's unpack this by starting where Pastor Tim Travis begins his teaching. He takes us to the book of 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, and he introduces us to the churches of Macedonia. Now, I want to use an analogy here for you, the listener, because I think it helps bridge that 2,000-year gap between their world and ours.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
So when household budgets get tight today, like inflation is up, gas is really expensive, charitable giving is usually the very first line item we cut from our budget.
Oh, absolutely. It's the easiest thing to drop.
Right. We treat it like a streaming subscription. Yeah. Money is tight, so, you know, the subscription goes. But for the Macedonians, giving was treated like the essential utility bill.
Yeah, like keeping the lights on.
Exactly. It was the absolute priority, regardless of what was in their bank account.
What's fascinating here is the psychological flip that Pastor Travis points out.
What do you mean?
While Paul writes that these Macedonian churches were experiencing a great trial of affliction and deep poverty. I mean, economically, they were at the absolute bottom of the socioeconomic ladder.
Oh, wow.
And they were facing intense persecution from their own countrymen on top of that. Now, human logic dictates that severe poverty triggers self-preservation, right?
Right. You hoard what little you have just to survive.
Exactly. But Paul notes that their poverty actually prompted their liberality. They didn't just give reluctantly. The text says they begged Paul with much entreaty for the opportunity to give.
Wait, they begged to give away their money?
Yeah.
That is just mind-blowing, especially when you consider the contrast Pastor Travis draws with the church in Corinth.
Oh, right, the Corinthians.
Yeah, the Corinthians were much more affluent. They had resources. And a year prior, they had promised to take up an offering for the saints in Jerusalem.
But they didn't do it, did they?
Nope. A whole year goes by, and they haven't kept their promise. They just got comfortable. So Paul is essentially using the desperately poor Macedonians as this psychological mirror to challenge the comfortable Corinthians.
Yeah, he's showing them that wealth doesn't create generosity.
Exactly. Grace does.
And Pastor Travis makes a crucial theological distinction right here to explain how that works. He draws a really hard line between Old Testament tithing and New Testament giving.
Right, because they are different.
Very different. The Old Testament tithe was a command. It was the law. You just did it. But what the Macedonians are demonstrating is what Pastor Travis calls grace giving.
Grace giving.
Yeah, but it's giving out of grace, and it is entirely marked by sacrifice and faith. It's not a legalistic requirement or some kind of tax. It's a voluntary overflow of the heart.
I love that. And to break down the mechanics of how people actually give, Pastor Travis outlines three distinct levels.
Oh, right. The three levels.
Yeah. So the first is abundance giving. That's when all your bills are paid. You know, you have some extra cash sitting around and you give out of your surplus.
Which is a good thing to do.
It is a good thing. But it doesn't really require any real sacrifice.
Right.
The second level is sacrificial giving. Now, this is where you actually go without something you legitimately need in order to give. It comes from money that was meant for your own household.
That's a big step up. And then the third level, which is where the Macedonians were operating, is faith giving.
Faith giving, yeah.
Yeah. This is when you promise to give beyond your current power or ability, completely trusting God to provide the funds.
Wow.
You don't have the money in hand, but you step out in faith anyway. And we have to recognize the focus of their giving here.
What were they funding?
Well, this wasn't just them throwing money into a random benevolence fund to, like, fix a local building. Pastor Travis emphasizes that this offering was specifically focused on missions.
Oh, okay.
They were financially supporting Paul's church planting work in Thessalonica, so their vision went far beyond their own local struggles.
To really drive home what this kind of faith giving looks like in practice, Pastor Travis references a famous story from the KJV, right, in 1 Kings chapter 17.
Ah, the story of Elijah.
Yes. Elijah and the widow of Zarephath. So Elijah is sent by God to this widow during a severe region-wide drought. When he arrives, he finds her gathering two little sticks.
Just two sticks?
Yeah. He asks her for water, and then he asks her for a morsel of bread.
And her response is just heartbreaking.
It really is.
She tells Elijah that she has nothing baked. She only has a handful of meal in a barrel and a little oil in a cruse.
And just to clarify the older terminology there for you guys listening, meal is basically just flour, and a cruse is a small clay jar.
Right. She is looking at the literal bottom of her pantry. She tells the prophet she is gathering these sticks so she can go in, bake one final cake for her and her son, and then they are going to die.
Man.
That is the depth of her poverty.
But then the Elijah says something that honestly sounds borderline abusive if you don't understand the spiritual mechanism at play.
Yeah, it sounds harsh.
He tells her, make me thereof a little cake first. He asks a starving mother to take the literal last meal she has and give it to the work of God before she feeds herself and her child.
Which is just, it's unthinkable.
But because she trusts the word of the Lord, she does it. She sacrifices her last handful of flour. And the result is miraculous, right? The barrel of meal did not waste, and the cruse of oil did not fail.
It's the ultimate picture of reordering your priorities. She put God's work first, and that became the catalyst for God's miraculous provision.
So if the Macedonians and this starving widow were willingly giving up their very last crumb of survival, they must have genuinely believed the product they were funding was infinitely more valuable than their own food.
Right.
Which brings us back to that really uncomfortable question from the beginning. How do you calculate the actual value of what they were funding? What is the return on investment for saving a human soul?
That exact question is the entire focus of missionary Charlie Powell's teaching.
And he's got quite the background, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. To understand his message, you really have to understand the man delivering it. Charlie Powell is a 62-year-old missionary who has served in Mexico for 35 years.
Wow. 35 years.
Yeah. He's intensely passionate, but he uses this wonderful self-deprecating humor to disarm you. He jokes that after numerous neck surgeries, a knee replacement, having titanium plates and screws all over his body, he's like the $6 million man from the old TV show.
That's hilarious.
He even jokes with his wife that if they ever run out of funds on the mission field, she can just grab a power drill and sell the platinum out of his neck.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That is, wow. But here's where it gets really interesting, because Powell uses that humor to make a profound point. His body is physically broken, but his internal drive to preach the gospel is burning hotter than ever.
Yeah, it really is.
And he centers his entire argument around one mathematical question Jesus asks in Mark chapter 8. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?
Right, which brings us back to those cultural estimates we mentioned earlier.
The $1 donut.
Yeah, the Homer Simpson donut, the $540,000 solid gold fiddle, the EPA's $8.6 million value of a statistical life. Powell isn't just bringing these up to be funny. He is pointing out an economic reality of the universe.
Which is?
In economics, value isn't determined by the object itself. Value is determined by what the highest bidder is actually willing to pay for it. A house is only worth what someone will write a check for.
Okay, I hear this, and I understand the economic theory of the highest bidder, but I have to be completely honest here with you, the listener. It is incredibly hard to live this out in practice.
It's tough.
Powell actually brings this up in his sermon. He talks about the pressure to pay car insurance.
Oh, right.
If I don't pay my car insurance, I get fined tomorrow. My license gets suspended. The consequence is visible, and it is immediate. So how is a normal person dealing with normal life stress supposed to prioritize an invisible concept like eternity over a very visible stack of bills sitting on their kitchen counter?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the reason Powell is so adamant about this is rooted in two absolute truths about the soul, its rarity and its eternity.
Okay.
You only get one soul. You cannot trade it in for a newer model, and that one single soul will exist forever. Powell doesn't mince words here.
No, he really doesn't.
He is very direct that a soul will either exist in eternal life or it will exist in a place of conscious torment, what the Bible calls the lake of fire, a place of no peace, no light, and no love.
Which is terrifying.
It is. And when you contrast the temporary annoyance of a car insurance lapse with the unending eternal reality of a human soul in torment, the insurance penalty shrinks into absolute nothingness.
And that leads Powell to point out the true biblical value of a soul based on what the highest bidder paid. It's not worth a golden fiddle or $8.6 million.
Not even close.
A single soul is worth the precious blood of Jesus Christ. The life of the Creator was the price paid for the creation.
Yeah.
Powell vividly recounts the crucifixion to make this real. He talks about how Jesus left the splendor of heaven, was betrayed for 30 pieces of silver, was beaten, mocked, hung on a cross. But the specific physical detail he zeroes in on is the fact that Jesus had his beard plucked out.
It's a detail we often gloss over when we read the accounts, but Powell really brings it to life.
He tells that story about his daughter, right?
Yeah, he shares a story about when his own daughter was a baby. She grabbed his beard in her little fist and wouldn't let go. And he talks about how incredibly painful just a tiny tug was.
Oh, yeah. Any guy with a beard knows that pain.
Yeah, exactly. He uses that deeply relatable personal pain to highlight the unimaginable agony of Christ literally having his beard ripped from his face by his enemies.
It's a visceral, disturbing image.
Yeah.
And it's meant to shake us awake. Powell is arguing that if Jesus was willing to endure that level of physical and spiritual agony to purchase a soul, how can we possibly be indifferent to it?
Right.
And he uses a brilliant analogy to explain this mechanism of empathy. He says, if you hit your thumb with a hammer, you are going to cry.
Definitely.
Why? Because you love your body.
Yeah.
You care about your thumb. Therefore, if you genuinely love the lost people around you, you will shed tears for their souls. Tears are the ultimate, undeniable indicator of true love.
Which is an incredibly convicting thought. If we never shed a single tear for the people around us, do we actually love them?
That's a hard question.
It is. Because if tears are the metric of true love, then love requires action. The currency of missions can't just be dropping a $20 bill in an offering plate and walking away.
Right.
Giving financially is essential, as Pastor Travis established, but Powell takes it further. Valuing a soul requires going.
Right. He points to Acts chapter 8, where the Spirit tells Philip to join the Ethiopian eunuch in his chariot. The text says Philip ran to him.
He ran.
He didn't casually stroll over. He didn't wait until he finished his afternoon coffee. He recognized the eternal urgency of the moment, and he literally sprinted.
And it requires tears, too. Powell quotes Psalm 126. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him.
And a sheaf is just a bundle of harvested grain.
Right. Powell says, we need to be weeping as we plant the seed of the gospel over the lost mother, the lost father, the children who are currently on their way to an eternity separated from God.
But the most striking requirement he discusses is the urgency of time.
Yeah, the time aspect.
And to illustrate this, he shares a genuinely heartbreaking story from his ministry down in Mexico. It's about a family he knew intimately. There was a young woman named Alma who had been saved as a teenager, but fell away from her faith.
Okay. She had a nephew who was just 21 years old. He was out riding a four-wheeler, the brakes failed, and he crashed into a thorny mesquite bush.
Oh, no.
The impact completely paralyzed him from the waist down at just 21 years old. And he became incredibly bitter and angry at God.
And the tragedy in that family didn't stop with the nephew.
It didn't.
Powell talks about Alma's 18-year-old son and his father. Powell had continually witnessed to this 18-year-old boy. He had pleaded with him to trust Christ. But Powell says the boy just brushed him off.
Just ignored him.
Yeah, he acted macho, thinking he was tough and had his whole life ahead of him. He thought he had plenty of time to figure out religion later.
So many people think that.
But then Powell gets a message that the 18-year-old and his 35-year-old father were both killed instantly in a horrific car crash.
Wow. That is that's a devastating reality check.
Well,
it completely shatters the illusion that we have all the time in the world.
It really does.
And honestly, it makes me think about
how we usually view time in our modern culture.
Yeah.
So what does this all mean? Let me frame it with another analogy.
Sure.
We often treat our time like a rechargeable battery on our smartphone. We drain it today, running around doing our errands, but we subconsciously assume we'll just plug it in tonight and wake up with 100% charge tomorrow.
Because there's always another morning, right?
Exactly. There will always be another morning. But Powell's tragic story completely reframes time. It's not a rechargeable battery. It is a ticking, irreversible countdown timer. Once a second drops off that clock, you can never, ever get it back.
This raises an important question, then. What happens when that countdown hits zero?
Yeah.
Powell quotes Benjamin Franklin, who famously said, "You may delay, but time will not." We think we can wait until tomorrow to share the gospel with a coworker or a family member, but time won't wait. That 18-year-old thought he had decades left, but his timer hit zero. And Powell brings up the world death clock to show the staggering scale of this. He shares the mathematical reality. Roughly 56 million people die every single year.
56 million.
That breaks down to about 5 people dying every single second. Tick, 5 people face eternity. Tick, 5 more people. When you combine that relentless countdown with the reality of the lake of fire, it makes the casual, comfortable way we approach evangelism seem almost absurd.
It really does. It demands an abundant, urgent response. And Powell recalls an evangelist he grew up around named Sammy Allen to show what that urgency looks like in a church setting.
I love this story.
Sammy Allen used to quote Luke 6.38, "Give, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over." Powell says that Sammy Allen would look at the offering plate, and if he felt the congregation was holding back out of selfishness, he would literally send the plate back around.
Just pass it again.
You would pass it 3 or 4 times until people stopped giving out of their loose change convenience and started giving what they truly could to support the work of the ministry.
Whether we are looking at Pastor Tim Travis's Macedonian churches who were willing to starve themselves to give out of deep poverty, or we are listening to Charlie Powell pleading with a macho 18-year-old in Mexico who is about to tragically lose his life, the underlying thesis is completely identical.
Which is?
Personal comfort must be abandoned for the sake of eternity.
That is the core realization we have to walk away with today. From the Macedonian model of extreme grace giving to Charlie Powell's urgent, tear-filled plea, true biblical giving, whether it's giving your money, your tears, your time, or your physical energy, is never, ever about convenience.
Never.
It is fundamentally about viewing human souls through the lens of eternity.
If a soul is truly going to exist forever, and if its redemption was purchased by the actual blood of the Creator, then suddenly sacrificing a meal or a streaming subscription or our comfortable evening sitting in a recliner, it doesn't seem like a sacrifice at all.
No, it doesn't.
It seems like the only logical economic response.
And that leads me to a final provocative thought I want to leave you with today. I want you to mull this over on your own as you go about your week.
Okay, let's hear it.
If an independent auditor were to come into your life today, like if they were to review your bank statements line by line, if they scrutinized your daily calendar and how you spend your free hours, and if they looked through your online search histories.
That's a scary thought.
Right. Based purely on that evidence, what exact dollar value would that audit conclude you place on a human soul?
Wow. That is a very tough question, but it's the exact question these teachings are forcing us to confront.
Thank you so much for sharing your most precious, irreplaceable resource, your time, with us on this deep dive today. We'll see you next time.